Follow traffic, clear visual approach, runway 4 right, maintain 17 down on the 5 mile final. Okay, 17 to 5 out.
How to mitigate the risk from laser strikes while flying. From the National Business Aviation Association, this is Flight Plan, sponsored by Varion. I'm Rob Finfrock with your trusted source for the very latest business aviation news and information. According to the FAA, in 2023, there were more than 13,300 reported laser strikes on commercial airline, military, and general aviation aircraft across the United States. Now, that figure might seem to pale against the more than 16.4 million flights handled by the agency last year, but it's not a small number by any means.
I had two events in my 121 career, one on approach into LAX, Los Angeles International Airport, and one on departure from Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Keith Walsinger is a former airline captain who now flies for a small Part 135 operator.
The one in Los Angeles was a green laser, and we noticed that it was illuminating the cockpit at about 1,500 feet on short final for landing. The inclination is always to look and see where that signal is originating from, but through some training and some personal thoughts on the subject, we look away. So the idea is to not look in the direction of the laser, but to hide from it the best you can. And I've done that by ducking low in front of the instrument panel so that I'm not exposed to light coming from the outside until I'm pretty sure that the event is over or that we're past the point that it originated from. On the departure from Sao Paulo, Brazil, it's a similar thing. There's a notice for the Sao Paulo area that laser strikes are frequent occurrences there, and to be on guard and on lookout for that. So the one time I did experience that was a similar event. We noticed a green light entering the cockpit, and the immediate reaction is to look away, hide under the instrument panel, under the glare shield as best you can to avoid contact from the outside until you're pretty sure that the event is over and that you've passed the point of origin. But it gets your attention, and the problem is to not let it take your attention.
Keith does a really good job of explaining real-world scenario. Those two events that happened to him are unfortunately not unique to him. We're seeing an increase in laser strikes around the country.
Kevin Morris is a senior technical advisor with the FAA, who's very familiar with this subject.
The concern is obviously distraction, at worst, temporary blindness from the laser getting actually into the eye. Although we haven't had many reports of physical damage occurring, I explain to people that it's like a flashbulb going off in a dark room. You're going to have temporary blindness if it really gets into your eye. And that's something that we're very concerned with at the FAA. In fact, just recently, shining a laser or pointing a laser at an aircraft has become a federal crime that can be handled by different departments within the federal government, and additional fines, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the type of laser event and what was going on at the time, can be levied against the individual. So on the enforcement side, we're very serious about handling these and identifying the perpetrators and managing the risk.
My third guest is Michael Ott, a longtime captain and director of program operations at Phoenix Air. Like Keith, Mike has experienced two laser strikes in his flying career.
We had, on an ILS approach to Chattanooga, I believe it was runway 20, I think it was about 8.5 miles out, cockpit filled with green light, just as Keith said, looked away. The most useful thing you can actually do at that point, because it's generally only on one side of the cockpit, is the other person should be flying, and you should be looking down, taking notes on where you are, and other useful information that you can provide to help law enforcement and the FAA deal with the situation. So that's what I was doing because it was on my side of the cockpit. Bright green light fills the cockpit. And then on the approach to Ramstein at about 10 miles, we also had a laser strike probably 1.5 years later, also green light, but we were a little higher and it was a little further away, so it wasn't quite as striking an event. And in that case also, look down, focus on your instruments, keep your eyes away from the windows, and generally that's how we were able to proceed.
Mike, you and Keith have described incidents that happened within fairly close proximity to airports. I know you've researched this subject. Is that where these laser strikes most often occur?
According to the FAA's database for 2023, the greatest number of those events occurred to aircraft between 5,000 and 15,000 feet MSL. I'm still working on associating their height above the actual airport where they occurred, where we can associate an airport. But generally, it's within 10 miles on an approach path to an airport. You start getting higher, it becomes very difficult to hit an airplane with a laser above 15,000 feet because a laser beam is very small. It's collimated light. So it's meant to remain with a very small cone like you would normally have a regular light bulb. And you just have trouble focusing something that small on something as small as an aircraft that's at least 2 nautical miles or more away from you. As you increase in altitude, you see less effect, but a great many of them happen also below 5,000 feet MSL, which means you're almost certainly in an approach setting unless you're in a helicopter, and then those become very random because they are not following normal airport approach paths for the most part.
That was your experience as well, right, Keith?
Right. On the approach to Los Angeles at around 1,500 feet AGL and on departure in Sao Paulo was, I'd say, below about 2,500 feet AGL. So on the departure, obviously, you're traveling faster, faster ground speed, and you're climbing. So your exposure time frame is less than at low altitude, flying slowly on approach. And they apparently know that in Sao Paulo, typically you take off and make a turn shortly after departure. So that exposes that inward side of the cockpit to the laser. So I think the people that are using those in that regard are looking at planes as they're turning and trying to light them up that way.
Coming up, how pilots can minimize the effects from a laser strike and how to go about reporting these incidents. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Take your aviation operations to new heights. Introducing Varion, formerly known as ATP, your ultimate partner in achieving maximum aircraft uptime. At Varion, we understand the challenges faced by everyone in aviation. Our industry-leading technology solutions revolutionize aircraft management, so there's no more waiting, no more wondering, and no more wasted effort. Get real-time visibility of your maintenance, inventory, operations, and regulatory data right at your fingertips with an easy-to-use system, backed by a team of experts with deep aviation knowledge offering 24/7, 365 support. After 50 years in the business, we have built a growing reputation for getting our customers more aircraft uptime. That's why thousands of aircraft operators worldwide have already discovered the power of Varion. Say goodbye to downtime and hello to increased efficiency and profitability. Visit Varion.com to learn more. Varion, let's get you more uptime.
We're back now with Kevin Morris, Keith Walsinger, and Mike Ott, and our discussion about laser strikes on aircraft. And Kevin, based on Keith and Mike's experiences, it unfortunately sounds like many of these people who are pointing lasers at aircraft know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And as Mike and Keith were discussing, the majority of laser events do happen in that 5 to 15,000 foot range. And one other way to look at it might be kind of 10,000 feet or below, or when we see most of the laser illumination events, and obviously when they can become most dangerous to flight crews operating aircraft in and out of airports. Most of these laser events do occur around airports, but that's generally because airports are normally around populated areas, and that's where we're starting to see a lot of lasers show up. The cost of lasers has gone down dramatically in the past 10 years. I think you can just hop on any online web store right now and pick up a pretty powerful green laser for less than 10 bucks, probably delivery free.
Yep, I was just checking online. $9, and I can even have it delivered to me before 10 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, and I think if you read the really, 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 really small print on the laser, it might say something about don't point this at somebody's face. The education piece is really the challenge that the FAA is working on and partnering with different organizations and trying to get the word out about lasers. If you're looking at any of our social media content, we do have a lot of information that goes out where we work with news organizations to try to help people understand. And not only is this a crime, it's really ridiculous to do this. It's unsafe. It can distract or disorient a flight crew. It could be very dangerous to an aircraft full of passengers. And so our goal here is to try to educate everyone to understand the dangers of lasers and to make sure they're not pointing them at aircraft.
Kevin, what does the FAA recommend for preparing for the possibility of a laser strike? Is this something that crews should perhaps include in their pre-flight briefing?
In instances where you're flying into an airport where either you've experienced laser illumination events yourself or there's been a lot of illumination events, I definitely think working that into your crew brief is something that's important to do. Before I came to the FAA, I was an airline pilot, and you'd certainly be aware of migratory waterfall at certain times of years, definitely around certain types of airports. And I think the same can be done for laser illumination events. If you're going into an area where you've read reports or you've had it happen yourself, including what do we do if we get a laser illumination event into the crew brief is definitely something that can help make your trip more safe.
Mike, how do you handle that at your operation?
When we're aware of an increased threat level around an airport, certainly the problem is that in the world of 135, we are not going to a finite list of destinations. So it is much more difficult to prepare.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was in a CRM class a few years ago at Bombardier Safety Stand Down, and they gave a little table of us, like four or five of us, you're going to have a laser strike, figure out your CRM for that. And we came up with an acronym on the word laser to define how we would respond. And it became part of how I prepared FOs and people I was training. You know, L for look away, A for aviate, because you still have to fly the aircraft. S for assess the situation, figure out, you know, is somebody injured? Is somebody flash blinded? Figure out what you have in front of you. Then engage all available support resources. For example, you may need to pull a flight attendant up to the cockpit to help if somebody is indeed incapacitated, just to help you deal with your suddenly increased workload, get ATC involved, all of those resources you have you may not have thought of. And then the R is record and report the details of the incident, generally to ATC as soon as you can safely do it in flight. And then once you're on the ground, the FAA has an online reporting form for the event. And when I filed mine going into Chattanooga the next day, I was talking to the FBI, Chattanooga field office. So they do respond and process that stuff very quickly, because somebody can get out of it. If they can buy it off of an online ordering service and have it delivered later today, they can put it in their pocket. So they're going to be moving away from the site very quickly. So evidence is very difficult to gather if they waited too long.
Great points, Mike. Keith, how do you recommend flight crews approach the possibility of laser strikes?
When we're flying, as Mike said, into a lot of different airports, not necessarily the same airports on a routine basis, you don't know where the threats might come from. So I think it is important to brief that and to make everyone aware of what to do in that event that something does occur, as well as both the departure and the arrival portions of that. One other question I had maybe that Kevin might answer is the FAA is doing a great job on tracking these laser events, and they have the Laser Initiative website that has a lot of great information on it. I'm just wondering, as Mike and I have experienced international laser events, what tracking is being done internationally, and do we in the U.S. have access to it?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure on the access piece, but I do know our international office does work regularly with other regulatory bodies around the world to track different types of events, and they meet regularly then to discuss those types of events. Obviously, what we put out on our website is U.S.-based, coming from our data from pilots like Mike and Keith, who are reporting laser events, who are filling out the form that was just brought up. So that helps us better to track that. But I'm not exactly sure if we have a sort of worldwide repository of laser events where maybe you could go look and see for an airport like Sao Paulo if there are those types of events happening. Something that definitely we can check into and maybe provide additional information to our pilots out there.
Keith, Mike mentioned his revised laser acronym for how to respond to a laser strike in the cockpit. What is your checklist for dealing with such an event?
The first thing would be to make a call out to your other crew members to say, hey, there's a laser, and everybody look away. So whether it's look the opposite direction out the window from the direction that the laser is coming from, or to focus your gaze into the cockpit for a few seconds at least, it's the best way, I think, to avoid any even momentary vision damage. One other thing I will mention really quickly is talking about briefing laser strikes, and as was mentioned, briefing bird strikes. This is probably best handled in a training event where we talk about different scenarios and things that could happen rather than briefing on an individual flight. I think if we have a general awareness that these things are out there and that they can happen, then we'll be prepared when they do to take the appropriate action rather than briefing it on each and every flight or every day.
Mike, regarding the last step of your mnemonic, reporting, how should flight crews report where a strike might have come from, given the first response should be to look away?
Your primary report is not where the laser is, but where you are and from what direction the light came. If you do any more than that, you have not looked away and you are taking a chance on injury, flash blindness, and other things. So your primary interest is in reference to the airport or latitude and longitude. That's why I said when you look away, if you're not flying the aircraft, you might be best served to be taking notes, frankly, on where you are when it occurs, so that you can make as accurate a report as possible to the FAA and, by virtue of the FAA law enforcement, on where it happened.
Kevin, I'd imagine that's the point where the FAA gets involved.
Yeah, absolutely. The reporting piece is critical. As pointed out, as soon as you're able to report the laser illumination event to the tower or the air traffic control frequency you happen to be on, provide as much detail as you can. With all respect, if you need to look away, that's primary. Just simply providing your location and which side of the aircraft it came from can be a big help. Our tower and air traffic personnel, through our Law Enforcement Assistance Program, or LEAP, there's another acronym for you, work directly with a lot of law enforcement agencies across the country. And the response times have been getting better based on those partnerships. So reporting is critical in addressing the threat. If that person's shining a laser at the aircraft, you're probably not the only one that they're trying to illuminate that evening. So the quicker that we can get the information to air traffic and then route that to the appropriate law enforcement agency, the better. And then, of course, if you fill up the form that we have too, it allows our Department of Justice and our FBI then to do additional follow-up if needed. But something that we definitely need, the more information, the better, because as was pointed out earlier, they can just put this laser device back in their pocket and walk away and nobody be any wiser. So the tracking of these individuals is certainly challenging, but the reporting is key to addressing the issue as best we can. If you experience a laser illumination event, aviate, navigate, communicate, right? The old pilot adage here, but certainly get that report into air traffic control as safely and as quickly as possible so that we can attempt to work with our law enforcement agencies. And then also it goes into our nationwide tracking database so that we can start to identify maybe there's a particular hotspot area that we can deploy additional resources to.
And when reporting a laser event, pilots should also consider providing a PIREP to warn other flight crews in the area of the potential for a laser strike. And while we focused on business aviation operations in this discussion, by far the most reported laser strike incidents involve commercial airliners, which makes sense given the regularity and predictability to their operations. But no segment of aviation is immune from this risk. Flight training and helicopter operations in particular need to be aware of the potential for laser strikes as well. For more information about mitigating the risk from laser strikes, including links to FAA resources on this subject, visit nbaa.org/laser. And that's the latest from the National Business Aviation Association. Remember, you can subscribe to all Flight Plan episodes at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including by asking your virtual assistant or connected device. Of course, you can also download Flight Plan directly from nbaa.org. I'm Rob Finfrock. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for a new episode of Flight Plan.
Right base, sending out a 3500.
All right, we got him inside. We're still in effect, 170.